Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Dravenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. I'm here today with Catherine Gaffney, owner of Modern Crumb, a new bakery that opened in May in 2019 in the Easton Public Market. Catherine, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Oh, thanks, Mike, for having me.
Can you remember when your love of baking and bread making started? Is there some memory that's deep in your mind that kind of takes you back to that pivotal day?
Yeah, you know, it's actually kind of funny. I remember the very first thing I tried to make for my mother, and I wasn't allowed to use the stove without adult supervision. So I really wanted to make these like little jam pasties, but I could only use the microwave. So I mixed flour and water and sugar together to make a dough. And then I put Smucker's grape jelly in the center of it and then kind of folded it over in a turnover. And I put that in the microwave and I left it on a little plate for her. She was at like a parent-teacher meeting. And I was like, did you like the jam turnovers I made? Did you like them? And, you know, my mother, being the great mother that she is, said, you know, they weren't my favorite. So after that, I started really getting into watching a lot of cooking shows on PBS. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watching Julia Child and watching Jack Pepin. That was where I first started getting interested in cooking. And, you know, growing up, my mother cooked dinner every night, and so I would help her cook. So it was something that was always on my mind. And then when I was in high school, I was given the opportunity for an internship at a fine dining restaurant in Boston where I grew up. And I ended up working there after I finished high school, and I stayed on for about 3 years. And that's actually where I met Lee and Aaron Schismar. But my chef there, Jeremy Sewell, encouraged me to go to culinary school.
Right.
And so he took me to a career fair at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. And that's where I kind of fell in love with the Harry Potter castle of it all and decided I really wanted to pursue this as like my career.
It's funny because we did have Chef Chismar in about a month ago, and he called that the Hogwarts.
Yeah, it really is. It's like the center dining room where everybody eats is called Roth Hall, and it was actually like the altar where the monks would like pray and stuff. So it's got beautiful stained glass everywhere.
Now, you did say that you are a native of Boston, and that's where you met Lee Chismar and his wife Erin Shea, who locally own Belit, as well as Mr. Lee's Noodles and Silver Shell. And you were a pastry chef at Belit for a number of years.
I was the pastry chef for a year at Belit after I finished culinary school. But, you know, I really had that draw to California and go out west. I feel like any kid that grows up in the East Coast really wants to go to California. So I went off to the Napa Valley and I got a job with Thomas Keller working at Bouchon Bakery.
And that's just north of Napa in California. And you rose to head baker there.
Yes.
We can say rose, right?
Yeah. I mean, I started out making $8 an hour as a bread shaper and worked my way up.
And what do you learn over time working with chefs like Chef Keller and Chef Chismar?
I mean, definitely the attention to detail, that everything is in the details, and honestly, a lot of time management. How do you get it done and everything that needs to happen in an 8-hour day? What does that look like?
Because you had culinary school. You were at Belit for 5 years?
I was only at Belit for 1 year.
1 year, okay.
Yeah.
But then 5 years out in Napa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then back in the Lehigh Valley now.
Yeah.
And this is your first solo venture.
This is my very first solo venture, which is really exciting for me.
And what's been going on to bring this to life?
Oh, gosh. Just so much help from part of the Easton Public Market. They've been a huge support in helping me get funding and as well as just helping me get PR off the ground. And everything else is kind of, I feel like I've taken everything that I've learned over my like my years of experience, and now I'm able to kind of showcase my own creativity and my own ideas and thoughts and flavors.
Well, let's talk about some of those. That's what people really, they love the background, but they want to know what you're making there and why. And we talked a little bit at the market last week, and you said you are making croissants.
Yes, absolutely.
Talk about your croissants.
Yeah, the croissants and pain au chocolat and other danishes are definitely a huge part of like our staples at the bakery. So our croissant dough starts off with a pouliche, which is actually just equal parts of flour and water and a small amount of commercial yeast. So that pouliche will mature for about 10 to 12 hours. Then we mix our croissant dough. After the croissant dough is mixed, it sits out for about 30 minutes, so it gets a little bit of fermentation. And then we actually retard that fermentation by putting the dough in the walk-in overnight for another 10 to 12 hours before we begin the lamination process. So lamination is the process of how all viennoiserie are made. It's basically the process of folding dough and butter over each other to create layers of dough, butter, dough, butter, dough, butter, you know, similar to like a puff pastry. Mm-hmm. So when the croissant dough, it gets some leavening from the yeast from the pouliche, but then it also gets leavening from, as the dough bakes, the butter will melt before the and then causes steam to rise up, which causes the layers of dough to push up, which gets those flaky, delicious layers.
And then, of course, you'd bake it.
Yeah.
Right? And I think you mentioned to me that as people look at the croissants, they might look a little bit different than what they're used to seeing, something yes. that's more commercially made.
Yeah. I mean, one guest came and said, you know, your croissants are too dark. And I asked them, okay, well, what other croissants have you had? And they're like, well, the ones I get at Costco, they're just a pale light color. And I'm like, well, it's a little bit of a different process to make those croissants versus the croissants that I make, you know.
Yeah. They also might be a little more delicious.
I like to think so.
You'll be making bread as well?
Yes.
Are there certain breads that you are especially fond of?
Yeah. I mean, for me, there's no better bread than a baguette. That's my absolute benchmark.
And what makes a good baguette?
It has to be 22 inches long. It has to have 6 scores. It has to be super crunchy and crispy, and then a soft, chewy interior. And I like to see a nice open crumb structure when I'm making baguettes.
And what goes into making it that way, other than lots of experience and care?
Well, one of the things is a high hydration level. So our baguettes have about 72% hydration. So if you're not familiar with baker's percentage, it's a way of bakers from around the world talking about bread recipes in a way that makes sense. It takes it all back to the numbers. So in a bread formula, something with a higher hydration in like the 60 to 85% range is going to have a much more open crumb structure, like a ciabatta. And then something like a brioche, which has a much tighter crumb structure, that's only going to be a hydration about 32 to 40%. So the high hydration helps the baguettes be really light and delicious and crispy, as well as the fact that we're using a pouliche combined with a white sourdough starter.
And how about sweet items that you're making?
So for sweet items, we have a lot of different cookies. So right now we have a lime coconut vegan cookie, a chocolate mint vegan cookie, a chocolate chip cookie, a ranger cookie, which is going to be gluten-free. So that's going to have pecans and coconut inside of it. And we'll also have brownies, blondies, mousse cakes. So we're going to have a peanut butter mousse cake that has like a chocolate tart dough layer. Some strawberry rhubarb tarts, cheesecake, of course, and then, of course, vanilla and chocolate cakes with some different fun little additions.
Now, with your yeasted items, are there specialty yeasts that you might use for each different type of bread? Or when we talk to brewers, they have different types of yeast to impart different flavors, different profiles.
I mean, there are definitely different types. The brand of yeast I use is called Saf. So it's an instant dry yeast, which is nice because you don't have to dilute it in water. Fresh yeast, I tend to stay away from just because sometimes you can't really be too sure about the activity of the yeast quality when you're working with fresh yeast. So that's why a dry yeast is a much more reliable source and has a longer shelf life as well.
And you mentioned a sourdough starter. Mm-hmm. Do you have either a particular recipe or do you have a starter that you've been using for years and years and years? These are legendary.
I think it's actually kind of funny when people talk about, like, oh, this is my 18-year-old starter. You know, for me, the starter is only as healthy as its last meal. So if you make a starter and you're using some kind of, you know, lower grade flour, and that's what you start, and then you start feeding it healthier flour that's like, you know, from a local mill source, you're changing the flavor of that starter by the quality of flour. It's not about the age. I mean, there's a cool story for sure. Like, oh, I was handed down this flour starter from my great-great-grandmother, and we kept
it alive.
It's
been going since the 1800s,
right? I mean, there's definitely some nostalgia behind that. I don't actually believe it imparts any different flavor. The one thing that does change the flavor of a sourdough starter besides the ingredients is where that starter is being kept. So the wild yeast that's in the air, in Egypt, that has a different wild yeast that's in here in Pennsylvania. So when I made my starter, I actually made it in my backyard. It starts out with just equal parts of flour and water. You put it in a bowl, and I just let it sit out on my porch for a couple hours. And then I brought it inside, just put a damp towel over the top of it. And then the next day, I discarded half of it, refed it with fresh flour and fresh water, and I let it sit out for another day out in my backyard. Brought it in.
And backyard in Easton, right?
Oh, yeah, my backyard right in Easton. And after about 3 days, then it's healthy enough to, you'll start to see like some little bubbles, some activity going on. And then by day four, it's ready to make bread.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. So why Easton?
You know, it's funny. My family, it all started with my brother. He was living in Philadelphia, and then he met his wife, and she was from Nazareth. And, you know, she is definitely a go-getter kind of woman. So once my niece was born, my mother wanted to get a house in Easton to stay closer so she could visit her granddaughter once a month. And then my sister decided she wanted to go to school in Pennsylvania for those cheaper in-state tuitions. And so I just kind of all of my family started coming back to Easton. I had met my husband in Napa, and we really wanted to get married and live somewhere more affordable than the Napa Valley. So I said, hey, you know, I've got this chef that has a restaurant. Let me see if he's looking for any help. So I set my husband up with a job, and then it all just kind of
Lee's Noodles.
Yeah, now he's the chef at Mr. Lee's Noodles.
And to what extent do people like Chef Chismar and eventually yourself help build a local food culture by attracting people who have a high sense of quality and really care about what they do in terms of bringing other people in?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a ton of foodies in the Lehigh Valley. I think people really kind of expect it. And so now that I think the area is so beautiful, I mean, I don't know if I'm doing anything to attract other people. Maybe, I mean, I don't know if I think that highly of myself, but I think the area is really like coming along. You know, I think it's great that right 5 minutes from my house, I can take a bus into New York City and, you know, be back here in the next day and then still enjoy my nice, like, small town that has everything that I could possibly want to do.
Do you think food talent has its own gravitational pull where people are drawn to, you know, you went to see, you know, Chef Keller out in California and Chef Chismar here?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that the better restaurants, you know, more people get excited and the more people want to come and really kind of experience what's going on around here.
And hopefully you'll be part of that in Easton.
Yes, of course.
Catherine, thank you for joining us here at WDIY.
Thank you.
And best of luck with the Modern Crumb.
Appreciate it.
I'm Mike Dravenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.